So you stay.
Yeah, so I said no, thank you. Thank you, but no, thank you. We remained in Pittsburgh.
And then you, could you tell me a little bit about your Israeli sabbatical?
Sure. I'd maintained relationships with Israel at the time, apart from my parents, but also with colleagues. And one of these colleagues was Professor Alberto Wachs, Wachs, who was the professor of sanitary engineering at the Technion, the Israel Institute of Technology in Haifa. And we have taken by correspondence and seeing each other at meetings and so on. And he had a sabbatical coming to him, and I had a sabbatical coming to him. And what we did was we exchanged positions for 1 year. We came here, and we went there.
What a clever idea. You changed your mind about how you felt about Pittsburgh, or your original impression in 1947?
Yeah. Right, well.
If you could elaborate on why you changed your feelings, I'd like to hear
well,
that.
Not only did Dr. Crabtree, convince me of the changes that were occurring in Pittsburgh, the notion of coming to work under Dr. Perrin, who was the Surgeon General when I was in the Public Health Service, I'd never met him. Dr. Crabtree had been in charge of all the Public Health Service personnel assigned to UNRWA, but I had never met him because, there were hundreds of us, and then he was a deputy surgeon general or assistant surgeon general, and I was, lonely down the totem pole. But the whole notion of developing a program in environmental health at the school was very challenging. The other very great attraction was the fact that Professor T.F. Hatch was here as professor of industrial health engineering. And he, at that time already, was very well known for what kind of a person he was and what kind of a scholar he was. So combining all those things, and I suppose. On a personal basis, being offered a position rather than having to look for one, which is, except for a starving summer in New York in 1938 or something like that, pounded the sidewalks to get a job. And finally got a job in the Jewish Educational Society of New York, running the mimeograph machine. 25-cent lunches and things were available at the time. Anyway, it was an interesting challenge, and both Anne and I felt that it was worthwhile, even though Pittsburgh was anathema in terms of its living conditions, presumably. Dirty, smoky city. Well, when we came, we were out in the country for.
And where was that?
In Ingemar.
And aside from your professional stimulation and the appeal professionally to be in Pittsburgh, did you feel that even the, after Pittsburgh was cleaned up and did you feel that Pittsburgh has been a better place to live? Or?
Oh, we. There's no doubt we've enjoyed it.
What have you enjoyed?
We've enjoyed the city itself. We've enjoyed the circle of friends we've made. The kids enjoyed growing up here. And in terms of the kinds of needs that we felt we required, terms of the cultural activity, it was really sufficient for us. It was provided us with abilities to do things which in other places we would have had to have an income which was twice or three times what we had. The school has always been very great support in the sense of being able to give it something and getting back from it in terms of the students, in terms of research activities. In the days that Professor Hatch was here, it was, and others, it was a joy, you know, in terms of exchange and ability to work together. And it was a constant, at that time, it was a constant growth situation.
Being academically oriented and knowing that I'm sure that it was very important for you that your children received a good education, did your children go through the public school system in Pittsburgh?
Oh, yes.
In Ingomar, you felt that it was a good elementary and secondary
school? The North Allegheny School District was one of the better ones in the county at that time, still is. Mm-hmm. And it was a little bit traumatic moving into the city, in the sense that our oldest boy was, you know, sort of top dog in his class. Ingomar, you know, had quite a bit of competition when he came here to Taylor Overdyce, but it didn't bother him. It didn't bother him in the long run, certainly not.
Okay. You mentioned Philip Nelbach. Could you give me some? Does he have a title or?
Well, he was director of this United Yugoslav Relief Fund of America.
And Roberta Walks.
Alberto.
I'm sorry.
Alberto.
Is he Italian?
No, it's an interesting thing. You know, he's an Argentinian with a Zionist background. And left Argentina. Must have been in the early 50s.
Did he go to Argentina from Europe during the war?
No. I think his family had lived. I'm not privy to it, but I think that his family had. He was born in Argentina.
Okay.
Yeah, there was an interesting part. The only other. Apart from this offer to come to New York City, the only other tempting possibility through the years, a number of times it happened, was to go back to Israel and to work for the Ministry of Health and Sanitation. But under the circumstances, the main deterrent was a large family and a small income. Made it, you know, it wasn't a piece of cake here, but it made it impossible there to raise a family.
Did any of your children have any particularly strong attachment to Israel?
No. When we came to Israel, Lisa was in third grade, you know, David was in fourth. Joel was bar mitzvahed in Israel with his class, which is the way they bar mitzvah in Israel. And Deborah was in high school, and Mark was in high school, and Carla had just graduated. She had 1 year here at CMU at the time. Carla probably had the most difficult time because she couldn't. She wanted to go. She has artistic bents, and she wanted to go to Bezalel, but they wouldn't let her come in unless she stayed for 4 years. Bezalel is the art school in Jerusalem. And so she enrolled in courses at the Hebrew University, but you know, essentially wasn't a lost year, but wasn't as good as it could have been. Mark and Deborah had the greatest difficulty because they were thrown into the same high school that I went to, the Tzifere Ali, and literally were thrown to the wolves because of their lack of Hebrew. And they tried to learn some Hebrew here before we left, and they really had difficulties and special tutoring and that. But and for a while we even thought of taking Mark and putting him at the American school in Herzliya, but that either would have meant boarding or a long commute every day, and that was very difficult. And he decided that he didn't want it, so he really just suffered it through at the Reale. They both, you know, attended, you know, they had sort of military training in high schools in Israel. They still do, but they participated in that, and they participated in all the activities. So by the end, when we left, they knew quite a bit of Hebrew and really didn't lose anything, but it was a difficult learning experience. I was going to say traumatic. Probably was traumatic.
I wanted to ask you one thing that I have never heard, and my not having heard it doesn't mean that everyone else doesn't know it, but is it true, did I hear correctly, that anyone that goes through the, any child that goes through the school system automatically in Israel at the age of 13 becomes bar mitzvah?
Oh, I don't think it's automatically.
Okay.
They held a class, bar mitzvah, at the school
okay.
which Joel was going. There was a ceremony. Each one was given a Bible by the mayor of the city of Haifa, which we still have.
I'm going to go... wanted to ask you one thing. I'm going back to some of my notes from last week. You mentioned farm life in the North Hills.
No farm. It was just that we had 5.5 acres and an old orchard on it. And finally, there was a, Dr. Gizan was a member of the faculty here at the School of Public Health, who was far more of a farmer than we ever were. And he had some sheep, and we bought some of the sheep, and we used them as four-legged rotary mowers. You know,
oh, wonderful.
To mow it, and it was fun. However, Falk School thought it was a farm, and they'd bring their kids out to the Shapiro farm. It was no farm.
Okay.
But the kids had fun, and it turned out to be the, under the circumstances, it turned out to be a very, the right thing to have done is to move out there.
Any Jewish families at all?
Very few. One was Dr. Leslie Falk,
okay.
who at that time was head of the United Mine Workers Health and Welfare Fund here in Pittsburgh,
okay.
in the region. And otherwise, I think we were the only Jewish family in the North Hills.
Okay, that's interesting. Now, UNRWA is the United Nations Relief
and Rehabilitation Administration.
Okay. United?
United Nations Relief and Rehabilitation Administration. Not to be confused with what is called now UNRWA, W-R-A, that refugee thing.
Okay. There was one other thing that you mentioned, that you brought a ship with food to Yugoslavia.
No, I didn't bring it.
No, I mean, you were on the ship.
I was
Excuse
on the
me.
Ship. I was a passenger.
Okay,
no,
I understand that. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Was that food distributed just to Yugoslavia, or was it coming to Europe for distribution among...
No, this was in December of 1944, before the end of the war, and it was the first food relief to Yugoslavia.
Just
they had Yugoslav ships which were bringing them, some of them. When my wife Anne also moved from Italy to Yugoslavia. She came on the Yugoslav boat, which went to Split. It was a smaller, much smaller vessel, ferry-like vessel, but they also brought food stuff over.
Just to Yugoslavia?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, this was...
Okay. I also would like you to tell me a little bit more about the Joint Distribution Committee. You talked about it last week.
Right. That's really the subject of, apart from the work, the stop that for a minute until I find some things here. Actually, in October or September, they sailed for the United States from Palestine, my parents and I, on October 12, 1921, and with the notion of a vacation. But in the meantime, they decided to quit the medical unit in Palestine and return to the United States. And this got my father into trouble with Miss Zold, who didn't think he, you know, who thought that he would return. Anyway, there was a long letter here from her that he quotes. And they returned to the United States October 24th. My sister was born on the 31st of October.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they moved to New York City. And he went to visit a Mr. D. Haas, DEHASS. I don't know who he was. And they talked about Palestine, Hadassah work. In the course of conversation, he lifted the receiver and called a number and said, "Bernard, there's a man in my office I believe you'd glad to talk to." And that was Dr. Bernard Flexner, then secretary of the medical committee of the Joint Distribution Committee.
Well, they were okay. Bernard, F-L-E-X-N-E-R.
You know, those the Flexner brothers.
And he was head of the Joint Distribution Committee.
He was secretary to the medical committee, okay, of the Joint Distribution Committee. And the man, as my father said, who had much to do with the shaping of health activities in Palestine.
Okay.
And he asked him if he'd like to go to Palestine again. Process of organizing a medical unit to do malaria work under the auspices of the health department of the mandatory government. It was a unique kind of operation of having a Jewish organization fund health activities, but as part of the mandatory health department. So it's relatively different. They had just returned from Palestine and thought that they'd be staying in the United States. And that was the beginning. And also relationship with the Rockefeller Foundation, which has been doing, what was at that time, still is, doing an awful lot of malaria work. As I was reading this the other day, I kept on thinking, I wonder what my father would think now of our lack of success in conquering malaria worldwide. It was, we were so brash as to think that we could have a malaria eradication program, which does not exist, has not come to be.
I think we're going to end the tape now, Copy.
Okay.
I'm going to get back to a little bit of